Larry Chance of the Earls, and you're listening to, oh yeah, one of my dearest friends on earth, Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. One of my dearest friends, Mike Miller. Yeah.
Hi, this is Dodie Stevens. Remember tan shoes and pink shoelaces? And you're listening to my very good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. Enjoy it.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as a guest on the show a friend who is a songwriter par excellence, the writer and lead singer of Rhythm of the Rain with the Cascades, Jean-Claude Gumeau. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And, you know, it's funny because I've been threatening to have you on the show for a long time now, and we discussed it a long time ago, and I'm really glad that we got a chance to hook this up.
Yeah, me too.
Of course, through our mutual friend, Ned DiMaggio, who just called me up and said, your guest next week is going to be John, and that's the way it is. So I said, fine, because I've been meaning to do that for a long time. Let's talk about your musical roots. You were born in Cleveland, which is actually the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's correct. Yeah, I was born there. I left there when I was 19 years old, and courtesy of the U.S. government, I joined the Navy.
Okay.
They flew me to San Diego, and that's where I spent my boot camp and really where I got involved in the music business, because I had no idea that I would ever wind up, you know, singing and writing at that particular point.
No, I understand how that is. Now, your parents actually were from England, is that correct?
No, my parents, my grandfather came from England, yes.
Your grandfather came from England. I have very good friends that just arrived here from England, believe it or not.
Well, my grandfather was born in Cornwall, and hence the name Gumeau. The name Gumeau is actually Cornish English. I know many people think it's French, but it's not.
So you've been studying your genealogy. It's a very in thing to do right now. My grandparents and great-grandparents came from Russia and Austria. One side were crazy Bolsheviks, and the other side were very, very refined Austrians from Vienna. So, you know, it was a great mix. I got the best of both.
I've been doing genealogy for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a direct descendant of Miles Standish.
Wow.
And also of George Sewell, and they were both aboard the Mayflower.
Yeah, you know, now it's really funny because, you know, when you study the Mayflower, they teach it a certain way in school. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I mean, you have to say that the people that came over on the Mayflower are the royalty of these United States, so although they were a very eclectic bunch. That's very interesting.
A lot of people think that the Mayflower actually sailed out of the Netherlands.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, because the people that were aboard the Mayflower were religious, you know, they were, you know, they had their own religious beliefs.
Right.
And they were being actually persecuted in England, so
right.
They went to the Netherlands. And that's where the ship actually left from. But strangely enough, you know, the Mayflower, I mean, you know how American history is one of those kind of things that they take, you know, like the first Thanksgiving and that sort of thing.
Right.
And make it into something that was just some kind of huge, big deal.
Yeah, grandiose. I know.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, you know, it's a nice little story.
Right.
But it's... there's so many other things that happened around that period that were equally as important, but they never got the press.
I understand sociologically and politically and all the rest of it. We tend to just take things and just like get a snapshot view of what they are and then on to the next. So musically, now you were in the chorus. When you start off singing at a very young age, I guess it becomes part of you. And you had, as I understand, a situation where you performed with the New York Met Opera on tour as part of the chorus with some young students. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I was a member of I was in Mrs. Clark's Boys Chorus when I was about, and I was a boy soprano, believe it or not.
Where is she now?
I don't know. She's probably passed away because she was. I was just a kid then. I was, you know, in fifth grade.
Right.
And she was an older lady at that time.
But, right. Yeah, but how cool is that? You know, that's.
Well, it was. You know, I performed with. You know, I was on the stage with Reese Stevens and Robert Merrill.
Right, I remember Robert Merrill. He sang the national anthem at my favorite ballpark, Yankee Stadium, for years.
Is that right?
Yep.
But, you know, these people were superstars in the Met at that particular point in time.
Absolutely.
And I was in the first act of Carmen.
Wow. That's...
And I still remember, to this day, the everything that I had to sing. I had to sing it in French. And I had no idea what I was saying, but, you know, because it was all just kind of taught to us.
Right.
And but it was exciting. You know, they had us backstage and put makeup on us and costumes. And
did they take pictures?
If they did, I never saw them.
Oh,
I don't
that's
remember
stupid.
Seeing them anyway. Yeah. That would be fun to have. It really
yeah,
would.
Yeah, I'm big on remembering all of that stuff. You know, it's like I have all these pictures that I keep digging out and tapes, cassette tapes and recordings. Then I said, oh, my goodness, I didn't even know I had this, you know.
I wish I still had the demo tapes that we made before we signed with Valiant Records.
Yeah, I hear you. But I have some of those going on, too.
Or even maybe the first draft of Rhythm of the Rain on paper, you know, written out on paper.
I've tried to get in touch with people that did some productions, you know, back in 61 and 62 and 63 with subsidiaries of MGM and whatever, and who knows where they are.
Yeah.
It's tough. But anyway, let's go back to you joined the Navy. Your creativity wasn't being wasted while you were in the Navy.
Not really, no. I was, first of all, I never realized when I joined the Navy that I would go, you know, aboard ship and fall in with a bunch of guys that had their own band aboard the ship.
Right.
And I used to go to all their performances and kind of their biggest fan, and we got to be friends, and they eventually asked me if I would manage their band.
Right. Now, that was the Silver Strands?
Right, yeah.
How did they come up with that name?
I don't know. They had that name before I even came aboard the ship, so I don't know where they got that.
Right.
I think isn't there an area down in, I don't know if you know San Diego, but I think.
I love San Diego, and as a matter of fact, our youngest daughter just moved to Newport Beach. She's there a year, and she's engaged. She's getting married, and she just loves it there, and we've started to come out on a regular basis.
Well, that's great. San Diego's, I lived there for 8 years after I was discharged from the Navy.
Right.
And I love San Diego, yeah. But there's an area, I think, on over by Coronado that I think along the ocean front there, and I think they call it the Silver Strand.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's where they got the name. I'm just guessing it.
I stayed at the Coronado Beach Hotel, and let me tell you, after watching Some Like It Hot over and over and over again, because they play the movie, you know, back to back to back to back,
yeah.
And I said, you know, it's beautiful from the outside, but it's very musty and dingy on the inside.
Really old place.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of charming. I haven't been there in years, but it's an institution there. It's, you know,
absolutely.
It's almost historical.
When you pull up and you look, you know, at the front of the hotel and look at the sand, you know, and the beach and what you can actually see. Marilyn Monroe running down the beach, and you can see Jack Lemmon, you know, just to the right of her, and Tony Curtis chasing her. I mean, you can see it. You can actually feel it and see it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Silver Strands, and you started managing them.
I started managing them, and I used to go to the drummer in the group. He and I used to get together in his office with our friend Lenny Green,
right?
And who played guitar. And Lenny would play guitar for David and I, and we would sing Everly Brothers songs.
Uh-huh.
And I was not performing with them at all. And finally, they said, "Well, you got to come up on stage and sing some of these songs with us."
Right.
And that's how it all began. And before long, they had me doing solo stuff. I was singing Ricky Nelson songs and. Bobby V songs and
all right, so you know it's like each week you added a little more. It evolved
yeah, because right. A lot of what the Silver Strands did with the Silver Strands, by the way, eventually they changed the name to the Thunder Notes,
right?
And by and large the Thunder Notes were kind of an instrumental group. In fact, our first recording contract was with Bob Keane's Delphi Records.
Uh-huh.
who had Ritchie Valens.
Oh, okay.
And we did one record for Bob Keane, and
right.
it was an instrumental. And one side of it was called Thunder Rhythm, and it was written by Lenny Green. And then the other side was a song also that Lenny wrote called Payday.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a kind of a rousing, rowdy Western kind of sounding, like the Bonanza theme kind
right,
of.
Right, okay.
And that came out, and it quietly died, you know, and that was the end of our...
Which happens. I've had a few of those.
Oh, yeah, haven't we all? God. And it wasn't... But as the group, you know, began to evolve, we started getting more into singing harmony and doing the vocal stuff. And,
I gotcha.
And all of us were writing songs at that point.
Which is great when you have so many people that write. I know mostly in the groups that I've been in, I've been the writer and the vocal arranger because I played guitar since I was about 8 years old. So mm-hmm. having that point of reference to create and construct vocals with is a godsend, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
As many groups as I've been in where the guys will get together and chime off and they'll sing and all of a sudden you're hearing, nope, it's not in the chord, guy. That note, it's discord. No, but that's the way we did it on the corner. Well, it's not in the chord, you know. It's like we're playing with the big boys now.
Yeah. You know, I've been very, very fortunate because from the time I was little, I have always had a natural ear for harmony. I could hear chords in my head.
Cool.
And I've never had a music lesson in my life.
Wow, this is great.
And I just, you know, it's just somewhere in the, back in those that genealogy, somebody back there must have, you know, had some genes that were implanted in me somehow, and I was able to, well, everybody in my family, they all love to sing. In fact, my sister Dorothy sang on the radio when she was a little girl.
Wow.
And so there's always been some, you know, the singing part of things. And strangely enough, going to the genealogy thing again, I'm also a distant cousin of the guy who, his name is Brewster Higley.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy who wrote Home on the Range.
Oh, wow. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah, he's one of my first or second cousins or something like that.
Wow. But Home on the Range has been covered by a lot of people, but it still hasn't been covered by more people that covered Rhythm of the Rain. And we'll talk about that because Rhythm of the Rain has become an American standard at this point. So here we are. We're in the Navy. The Thunder Notes have Thunder Rhythm. I guess the Cascades grew out of that situation.
At that particular point, the bass player, who was not in the Navy, he was a kid named Dave Stevens.
Okay.
Dave passed away about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And David's parents had a guest house out in back of their place, and we took over that guest house, and we put all of our horrible, cheap recording equipment in. We had a Webcore tape recorder,
hey.
And we had these cheap microphones hanging from the curtain rods and whatever, and we'd get in there and we would write.
Those days.
Yeah, we would do demos, and I think by the time our manager, we'll go into him in a little bit here,
right?
But by the time he got that tape, there was probably about 40 songs on the tape, and none of them, you know, sounded really very good because of the equipment we were working with,
right?
Anyway, that's we had this this guest house, and that's where we did our work. And sometimes we'd be in there 14, 15 hours at a time, you know.
Okay, so in other words, you guys had a big portfolio of tunes. A lot of them original tunes, I would imagine. Some of them covers.
All of them. Yeah, they were. This was all stuff we'd written.
Oh, that's amazing! Because you know, to be that early on in a group and to have that much original material is really a great strength. I mean, every group that I've ever been in, you know, if I wrote two tunes, you know, to bring to a record company, you know, that was a lot, and the rest of them were covers. I remember Marty, Sandy, and Howie telling me that Jay and the Americans auditioned for Lieber and Stoller. They came in and did Wisdom of a Fool a cappella, and, you know, because original tune, nobody had an original tune. They were looking to get hooked up with people, you know, that could write for them. So to walk in with that is a big strength.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the manager took the stuff to Barry Dvorzon over at Valiant Records, and
right.
And he had the talent and the wisdom and the experience, I guess, to see through the bad demos and saw some strength in some of the tunes.
Right.
And fortunately for me, the first things that he chose were both things that I had written.
Uh-huh.
And our first record was a song called There's a Reason.
Right.
And that was on our, that came out in 1962.
See if you remember this. One, two, three, four.
There's a reason for a snowfall, a reason why a tree's tall, a reason why a star is bright, a reason why the moon glows, a reason why the wind blows, a reason why it's dark at night. But I don't know why I should cry, just because you said goodbye. There must be a reason, I'd like to know why, oh why, I'd like to know. There's a reason for a sunbeam, a reason for a daydream, a reason why the desert's dry, a reason why a stream flows, a reason why there's rainbows, a reason for a cloudy sky. But I don't know why I should cry, just because you said goodbye. There must be a reason, I'd like to know why. There was a time when I could smile, we'd sit and talk of us a while. Times I never doubt your love, and thank my lucky stars above. There's a reason for a snowfall, a reason why a tree's tall, a reason why a star is bright, a reason why the moon glows, a reason why the wind blows, a reason why it's dark at night. But I don't know why I should cry, just because you said goodbye. There must be a reason, I'd like to know why. There must be a reason, I'd like to know why. Please tell me why, I wanna know why. Please tell me why.
It got a lot of play up and down the West Coast because we were a West Coast group, of course, and
right.
And it, but it, I think maybe it sold, oh, maybe 20,000-30,000 copies, and but the nice thing about it was it established us across the nation as a group that had something going for it, and that kind of laid the groundwork for the next record that came out, which of course was Rhythm of the Rain.
Right, but also, as I understand it, you guys recorded at Gold Star Studios.
Oh yeah,
and you know, that was a
legendary
mecca.
Gold Star.
Yeah, a lot of tunes came out of there, and of course, you know, Phil Spector. I know the whole story, and I know all the people who recorded there, as far as the Crystals and, you know, Righteous Brothers, and so many hits came out of there, and all of those West Coast groups really looked to do something at Gold Star, as far as I know.
Well, Barry Dvorzon was the producer, and he's the one who took us in there, and of course we cut that Rhythm of the Rain and all the tunes that are on the first album with the quote-unquote wrecking crew. And I have to tell you, they don't really like being called that.
Right.
But that's it's a sort of, you know, rock and roll history. They've always called them that. Carol Kay.
Right.
Hal Blaine.
Hal Blaine has been on so many records that, you know, you lose count.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They had just, you know... just hit after hit after hit that they played on, and
right.
they were the quintessential
rhythm section.
Oh yeah, were. They were just incredible.
Because we had certain rhythm sections in New York that were, you know, on a lot of those records. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure, as my friends who live on the West Coast all tell me, that I live on the best coast. that say to me, oh, you know, we're not the West Coast, we're the Best Coast.
Okay. That's a good one. I'll have to remember that.
Let's get back to here you are at Gold Star, and all of a sudden, there's a tune called Rhythm of the Rain. Now, was that part of the stable of tunes that you guys had recorded in the small studio, or was this a tune that you wrote at the time that you were actually in the studio at Gold Star?
No, we were actually, the Rhythm of the Rain and There's a Reason both were on the original demo tape.
Okay.
And it was presented to Barry by our manager, Andy DiMartino.
Right.
Andy has been gone now for, about 10 years. He died of cancer. And he and his brother, Augie, were kind of managing us, and Augie just passed away about 2 years ago.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how when time passes on and the phone rings and all of a sudden, you know, one by one, we lose people that are, you know, so spiritually close to us, because when you're creative with people, you just establish a bond with them that is a very strong bond. They become part of your soul.
Yeah.
You know. So I understand that. Part of you is lost, you know, because they're part of, you know, stuff that you've created. So Rhythm of the Rain was part of that group of tunes. Did you know what you had at that point when you wrote it? When you guys finished writing that tune and you actually said, okay, there it is, it's good enough to record now, did you know what you had?
Honestly, no. I don't think we thought we had some good stuff, but I don't think I ever really, you know, pinpointed Rhythm of the Rain and said, that's going to be a hit.
Right.
You know, if I could do that, I'd be a really wealthy man right now.
Understand, because you actually never know. I mean, how many times do you come out with a tune and you just are so insistent that the A side is the one that's going to be the hit, and somebody turns it over and the B side becomes the number one record, and people have done that for years and years.
Yeah, well, just like, you know, our follow-up to Rhythm of the Rain, as you know, was The Last Leaf, and on
right.
The other side of The Last Leaf was Shy Girl.
Come on, help us out now.
Yeah.
one need. That's all there is now. And my last hope lives with that lonely leaf, lonely leaf, with the last leaf that clings to the bough. Last summer, beneath this tree, my love said,
to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Shy girl, shy girl, don't shy away, little shy girl. I'd like to make you my girl. Each time I try to catch your eye, you always look. Thank you. can you be so near, yet seem so very far from me? Little shy girl, if only you were my girl. If only you knew I'm shy like you, then maybe you might stay. Oh, please don't shy away. I've got so much to say.
That was, the, like I said, the follow-up to Rhythm of the Rain. And
right.
When that record came out, it got split play all across the country, which kind of actually hurt it, because it seemed like everybody loved both sides and they couldn't make mind what side to
so
play.
So the record was competing with itself.
It was. And so it was, you know, actually The Last Leaf, I think, actually got up into the mid-50s or somewhere around there.
Right.
And it's always, you never know quite what, you know, what to put out.
Listen,
and
I know. I mean, I had a tune that we did on a subsidiary of MGM. It was Gino Moretti was the guy who signed Connie Francis to MGM. And it was GMC Records. It was called Where the Lights Are Bright, and a tune called Baby Pack On, that tune was written by Ray Cerrone of the Bell Notes. And we went in, we recorded it with Maynard Ferguson's orchestra, a lot of money spent on it, yada, yada, yada. It came out, picked with a bullet in Cashbox, same week as Kind of a Drag by the Buckinghams. Theirs went to number one. Ours fizzled out, made a little noise here and there. And just recently, somebody sent me an article or a web thing where the B-side, Baby Pack On, is a Northern Soul hit in the UK, and the record's going for something like $225. And I said, are you kidding? I don't even have a copy that plays.
You know, that's interesting. I have a similar story, which I'll very quickly tell you.
Sure.
Lenny Green, the guy that played guitar for us aboard ship, and
right.
He was a member of the Thunder Notes, and Lenny left the Cascades before we signed with Valiant because he couldn't get along with the other guitar player.
It happens.
And there, it's, you know, that's a whole
creative,
other story.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway, Lenny and I, we wrote a song called The Winds Kept Laughing.
Right.
And we went in the studio with a black girl, Betty Turner, a very talented young lady, and we recorded this song, The Winds Kept Laughing. And we put Andy DiMartino put it out on his own label.
Right.
And it nothing really happened to it.
Tomorrow, the wind.
I don't know, I guess it was Lenny, who was just, you know, surfing the net, you know, and he came across, he typed in, the winds kept laughing.
Right.
We found out that we had the exact same situation. The winds kept laughing. Google it sometime. It's a Northern Soul classic. I mean,
wow.
It is, you know, in England and Belgium and just that surrounding area where the Northern Soul thing is a big deal.
Right.
And this was, you know, they played it in the Northern Soul dance clubs and
wow.
For the longest time. And Lenny and I have never seen a penny.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, that's the way it is many times. But, boy, let me tell you, these people really get into the nooks and crannies, don't they?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing sometimes.
And they love their stuff. And, you know, and they get they are bigger aficionados than a lot of the collectors here. I mean, you know, I have friends, you know, through the radio show, which I've been doing about 3.5 years, and I did it just out of you know, when I wasn't singing, you know, on the road anymore and singing out, I just did it to stay creative, and it's really taken off. I have listeners all over the world because it's internet, and a lot of FM stations, you know, play the show as well. But it's amazing how I get letters from people in Sweden and Germany and Italy and Japan and so many from the UK that listen to the show because they broadcasted it, you know, at different times, you know, for the European market.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask me questions that are so sophisticated, and they impart information that is just phenomenal. And I say to myself, you know, they're really, really into it.
Yeah. I hear from people like that all the time, people that are very, very, they're musicologists. They're people that are, you know, dedicated
right.
to the study of rock and roll. And they, I mean, sometimes they even ask me questions sometimes that I either don't remember or can't, you know, really answer. But it's amazing. And I'm glad those people are around. You know, they also, you know, along with all the disc jockeys and the different people that keep the music alive, you
right.
know, these
I hear you.
People do as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, Rhythm of the Rain becomes a worldwide hit. And I've heard it said that if it wasn't for Walk Like a Man by the Four Seasons, that's the only tune that kept Rhythm from becoming number one.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you got that.
I do a lot of research. I do a lot of research as well.
Well, that's good. You know,
but I will tell you that really and truly, I never realized how many different entities and how many different pockets of musicians have covered Rhythm of the Rain. If you research it, symphonies have done it. Percy Faith has done it. Most of the pop singers have done it. There are girl groups on YouTube that are doing it a cappella. It's been done in so many different ways, upside down, inside out, left, right, yellow, blue, green, and orange,
yeah.
that I can truly say that it's become an American standard. I mean, it's and check me if I'm wrong, it probably is one of the most covered tunes in this country.
I think it probably is. I'm sure there's been hundreds, and I that may sound like an exaggeration, but I
right.
don't think it really is. I have versions of Rhythm of the Rain in everything from Dutch to Mandarin Chinese.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's just unbelievable. The song just has legs, and I think it's because of the fact that the song is so simple and easy to sing. I don't mean that as a put down. I mean because it, I think you know there's a lot of songs that are like that that just easily you know. People just, you know, everybody can sit down and sing it, boy, girl, whatever, you know.
Right. Well, you know, let's be honest, John. I have to give credit to the writer because the lyrics are universal and the melody is universal. And you wrote a great tune.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And that's why people gravitate to it. And that's why people want to sing it over and over again, because it's one of those tunes that lives and lives and lives on, you know.
So you were talking about the stats on Rhythm of the Rain. I talked to your guy in New York there, whose name escapes me at the moment, at BMI.
Okay.
He just told me that Rhythm of the Rain now has 9,250,000 plays.
Wow.
Which is unbelievable. And of course, BMI named it the ninth most performed song of the last century. Just to give you some perspective on that, number 10 was Georgia on My Mind.
Well, hopefully you've been able to benefit from that, not only spiritually, but, I hope that you've gotten your just due because, you know, I hear an awful lot of big writers that tell me, you know, I don't really do as well over the tune as I thought I would do or as I should do. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
it's for me, it's kept the wolf from the door for many years.
Okay.
I've always been, you know, had a nice, there's always been a nice comfort zone there as far as income is concerned.
Okay. That's the answer that I was looking for, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
On the other hand, when I was back, still wet behind the ears, young kid, I signed my manager with one of the not so good things that Andy DiMartino did. He
right.
had me sign an agreement where I gave up my mechanical rights to Rhythm of the Rain, and
right.
I just got them back in 1995.
Wow.
And they were, you know, it was some kind of a deal. It had something to do with allowing us to leave Valiant Records and change labels and go to RCA Victor.
I hear you.
And I know that's a whole other story, but the in the process of doing this, in order to get the release from Valiant, I had to sign this agreement. And I didn't know any better. I should have never done it.
Well, because, you know, in those days, the business was different. I mean, you were just glad to be there. Nowadays, the business is, you know, partially run by the music lawyers. Lawyers are the ones that are signing the groups and they're in for a piece, you know, so, and, you know, groups are much better protected than they were years ago.
Yeah, they are. They are. That's true. On the other hand, there are some of these people the lawyers that they don't know the first thing about music. And I don't always know that what they do is beneficial to the business, you know, in general.
Right. Well, you know, and also the business has changed. Let's face it, if you wrote Rhythm of the Rain, you know, in the year, you know, 2011, you'd have to scratch your head and say, okay, now how am I going to introduce this tune to the public? It's not about
exactly.
DJs playing it.
I've been, you know, all my new tunes, a lot of my new tunes, I'm scratching my head trying to figure out how to get them out there.
As are many really good artists from days gone by that have a lot of great material, and it's such a whole new ball game. But I'm going to interject here with something that I need to tell you, and that is, besides the Cascades tunes, I have listened to the stuff that you've been writing recently and, you know, since you left the Cascades.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just fabulous material, John. I mean, I have to tell you that each tune that I played, you know, one after the other, all of the lyrics and all of the music is written with such a sensitive touch. And the lyrics are so heartwarming, as are the melodies, that, I mean, it just blew me away. And, you know, I really enjoyed listening to a lot of the stuff that I hadn't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's great stuff.
You're talking about, in fact, your listeners might be interested in this. I have my own YouTube channel.
Right.
And it's called Rain Song For You.
Right.
Go to YouTube and put in Rain Song For You. I've got about 35 videos up there now, along with the tunes that, you know, it's, you know, I mainly did this to put the tunes up, and I just added some photos that I had, and I have a lot of my new stuff up there, and I just want to get it out there. I want somebody.
Right, you want it to be heard. Yeah, at this point, you just want it to be heard.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, listen, you know, I listen to There'll Be Love, I listen to I'm Overwhelmed.
As long as there's silver clouds in the sky, there'll be love, baby. Gently nod
when I do well in my careers. But there for me, look in your eyes. It's no surprise as morning nears. I'm overwhelmed by who you are. You're down to earth, you're not a star. But you always seem to win. I admire you from afar. Overwhelmed when you're near. Your image lights up in me. Overwhelmed by every sound you make when I'm around. Every little gently night. I'm impressed at your belief. I believe in your beliefs and in your God. And in all about you sin that you always seem to win. I admire you from afar and up close.
All the way to yesterday.
Right.
That's not what loving is.
Walking down the sidewalk in my old neighborhood, wanted so to come back, never thought I would. This is where I grew up. Maybe where I should have stayed. Back where childhood memories were made. I see all the way to yesterday from here. All the loving and the laughter and the tears. A window to my past as I raise across the years, looking all the way to yesterday, all the way to yesterday, all the way to yesterday from here. There's the house I lived in, faded now in time, images of family running through my mind. My mama's in the kitchen and my dad's out working hard. Me and brother playing in the yard. I see all the way to yesterday from here. All the love across the years. Going all the way to yesterday. All the way to yesterday. All the way to yesterday from here. There's the street I lived on. Hasn't changed, it seems. Still just hometown people. Change 1 minute of the way it was back then, back then. There's the school I went to, K through six, and the girl I had a crush on gave me my first kiss. And there's my best friend Willie on his way to my front door. Wish that I could talk to him once more. I see all the way to yesterday from here. All the loving and the laughter and the tears. A window same. I tried to find some way to take the grind of trying to keep you in the style that you adored. I never got no rest, had to feather you a nest and listen to you cry you needed more. What loving is. Oh, everything I bought and all my money bought, you keep it, babe, 'cause you mean to show. I would see how warm you are with your arms around the car, then think of me. Oh, I love you so. You bought yourself a yacht, a full-length ermine coat, you got a prissy sissy dog to match your hair. So many men are fools, and they'll hang you by the jewels in fancy gowns that plunge way down to there. That's not what loving is, and I can't stand another day. I've been around before, and I know that love is so much more. That's not what loving is. That's not what loving is, and I can't stand another day. That's not what loving is, and no. I've been around before, and I know that love is so much more. That's not that loving is. That's not what loving is. I've been around before and I know that love is so much more. That's not what loving is. That's not what loving is.
As I listened, and I listened late last night, early, you know, in the morning after midnight, and I couldn't tear myself away because each tune was better than the next. And I would never say that unless I really felt it.
Well, I worked hard on that stuff. A lot of those demos, they are demos primarily.
Right.
Some of it is done in a good studio.
Who are the players on some of those records?
That's an interesting question because... A lot of the stuff that I did in my little backroom studio here,
right.
I did using pre-recorded rhythm tracks.
Okay, great.
If you know how to put this stuff together.
Yeah, I have my Pro Tools studio in the house, and most of my productions, you know, for the last 2.5 years is all me, all the music and all the vocals. So you know,
well, that's what I do.
It's a process.
The vocal sounds on all that stuff. Most of it primarily is me just singing with myself, and that's okay. It sounds good, and I don't know if you heard the slow romantic version of Rhythm of the Rain.
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, you know, and that was a brainstorm too.
Listening to the rhythm of the falling rain, and it's telling me what a fool I've been. I wish that it would go and let me cry in vain and let me be alone once again. You know the only love I've ever known has gone away. Says she's looking for a brand new start. But little does she know when she left today, along with her she took, oh she took my heart. Set her heart aglow. pain in her heart, let the love we knew start to grow. So I keep listening to the rhythm of the falling rain, telling me what a fool I've been. Wish that it would go and let me cry in vain, and let me be alone.
I did have some background singers on that, and that was done in a garage in Simi Valley out here on the coast. And but I had been dreaming and hoping that someday I would go in the studio and do Rhythm of the Rain the way that, I mean, you know, the song is a sad song about lost love.
Right.
And the original version, as much as I love it, and it's, you know, it's a, hey, it's a huge, huge worldwide hit.
Right.
It's still, it has that happy, bouncy track that doesn't go with the lyrics at all.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and so I wanted to do a nice, slow, romantic version of it, and I had been planning on this, and I'd done four or five different demos on it to try it different ways.
Right.
And then finally went in the studio with my friend Chuck Cruz, and we recorded that, and I'm, you know, there, it has 250,000 plays on YouTube.
Wow.
And I, which is amazing, because it really has never been released to the public.
Well, you know, I'm sure that I can get an awful lot of DJs to play it. I think
it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that it's like what Neil Sedaka did with Breaking Up Is Hard to Do.
Right.
You know, he did a jumpy, you know, lively track to a song that, again, was, you know, it. I think it really lends itself better to being a ballad, you know, because as you know, he did it in later years, and it was a huge hit for him all over again as a ballad.
An up-tempo ballad, you know.
I guess, yeah. I had a good time with, you know, a lot of the stuff that I recorded in my little back room here. I did most of that, anywhere from 5 to 7 or 8 years ago. And I, after a while, kind of thought to myself, why am I doing this? I can't get it to anybody. Why bother? And it wasn't until I started doing my tours to the Philippines that I started, you know, thinking more in terms.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. How did you get to the Philippines?
Well, my friend Chuck Cruz, who was over in the Philippines, he was touring as the musical director for the Friends of Distinction.
Okay. I can dig it. You can dig it. We can dig it.
There you go. And he was riding around in a van with a promoter. And the promoter had the radio on, and all of a sudden Rhythm of the Rain came on.
Ah.
And the promoter reached over and turned up the volume, and he says to my friend Chuck, he says, God, I wish I could get these guys to come to the Philippines. He says, because, but of course we all know they were killed in a plane crash in the late 60s.
Ah.
And you won't believe it. This total fabrication story was circulated throughout Asia and the Philippines. And just about everybody over there thought we were dead.
Unbelievable. You know, well, you know, the Filipinos said that about Buddy Holly also.
Well, in his case, it was true, though, right?
I'm just teasing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm so gullible, Mike. You got to forgive me.
When you get that kind of news and then you run upstairs and you look in the mirror and you pinch yourself, it's a good day.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, the promoter, he was so amazed. He was so amazed that that we were alive, or that I was alive, you know, because he called and he said to me, he says, you've got to come over here. He says, they love you over here. He says, you guys are like the Beatles over here.
It's that's an amazing story, and that's why I interjected Dennis Lambert, because he wrote a tune called, one of the tunes he wrote that he recorded by himself was a tune called Of All the Things. And supposedly they play that song as a wedding song for years and years and years. He never knew anything about it. Uh-huh. And they invited him over there. He did these big tours, and his son did a documentary, which has been winning documentary awards and whatever. But that's why I have to hook both of you up so you can share your stories about the film.
Oh, yes. It'd be fun to talk to him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this a very similar thing happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very... beautifully accepted there. So, you know, tell me about that experience. I mean, that must have been an amazing thing because, of course, you played to audiences that knew the lyrics.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And we sang them along with you.
So it was so heartwarming and so emotional to go back there and see people sitting in the audience with tears running down their face and singing all the lyrics to every song on that first album, the Rhythm of the Rain album. And they knew all the words and knew all the songs, and it was just absolutely incredible.
Oh,
and but you know, the first time we went over there, there was a great deal of doubt and kind of mistrust of the fact. You know, people, they were so convinced that we were dead that we had to, you know, we used to go, we went on television shows, and we sang pretty close to, we either
right.
sang a cappella, or we sang with just an acoustic guitar.
Right.
So, because my voice still sounds the same
right.
as it did back then.
Right.
And the minute people heard my voice, they were convinced. They knew that we were not.
Oh, you have to do what they do at some of these oldie shows. You got to hold up the album cover from all those years ago and point to the faces. You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And of course on the. I'm sure you've seen the album cover on Rhythm of the Rain album.
Yes,
there.
I have.
So the pictures are very vague. They're they're sort of in a mist, you know.
Right.
I guess too, because the cover is all done in colors that you might see when it's raining. You know, purples and grays
right.
and blues. And,
right.
And but at any rate, yeah, it was a hard sell for the promoter to get people to believe that we were still alive. And when I say we, I went over there with three guys that had at one time or another been in the Cascades, but none of them were original.
Right, but you know what? In this business right now today, close enough.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the point is, you know, I was the one who sang the lead on every song on that album.
Right.
And so people knew my voice, and I, you know, it was easy to just put together anybody, you know, and so I, you know, some of the guys that I took over there were people that had been in the Cascades in the 60s, but they weren't, again, they weren't the original guys, but,
right.
And you know how the fans are. The fans tend to think that we all live forever, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true.
And they,
I know.
They think, you know, because we used to get asked all the time, well, are all of you original?
Right.
Oh, and they just don't realize how unrealistic that would be.
Right, I understand that because,
yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of the groups, you know, if you have one or two original members and the rest of them are second generation, you have to understand that in some of those groups, it would be impossible to have all the original members together.
Sure.
That's where we are at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like it when somebody, for some, you know, legal reason, loses the trademark and nine people run to establish it. And you go and you see a show, the original guys were all in their late 60s, and you see a bunch of 29-year-olds, you know, there. You know, that's a little bit far removed.
I went not too long ago. I went to see. You're going to laugh when you hear this. I went to see the Four Freshmen.
Okay, I know the group you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think the last surviving original member of that group, who owned the name, I
right.
think just recently passed away,
right.
as I recall.
Right.
But I went to see the Four Freshmen, and here's all these, you know, fresh faced guys in their 30s, you know,
right.
up there singing these songs, and they did them incredibly well. I mean, the arrangements were exactly like the original Four Freshmen.
Oh yeah, no, I know the group. I know the group you're talking about.
Yeah, I've always idolized the, you know, that. I love that sound. I love their chord changes. I loved. I love that harmony that they used. And,
right.
I mean, they were very, you know, influential in things that I did, you know, in later years.
Absolutely. Beach Boys borrowed from them as well.
Well, and the Beach Boys were very influential. You know, the Beach Boys came along a couple years before the Cascades. I think they had their first hit record, and I was just enthralled with the Beach Boys.
Oh, absolutely. They were so talented. Their harmonies were impeccable, and their musicianship was impeccable.
Yeah. I've always loved them, and not, you know, I mean, songs like In My Room and...
Absolutely.
You know, that stuff, I mean, it just, I mean, the surfing stuff, you know, left me, you know, a little bit, but the...
Right, but, you know, in other words, they borrowed from Dick Dale and the Deltones, you know, with the fast stuff and the yes. guitar riffs. However, when it came down to doing serious singing, I mean, they have a version of Graduation Day that make you cry.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean...
Well, yeah, anyway, there were just... if I could, I just think your listeners would be interested in a couple of little stories that you mentioned before about Gold Star Studios and the
right.
And Phil Spector and,
uh-huh.
and all this. Phil Spector was at our session when we did Rhythm of the Rain.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he, as you know, Phil Spector is kind of a strange guy to begin with.
Well, I was in a room with him a few times, and you know, Ronnie Spector lived in Danbury, you know, where I lived for years. I heard her version. I heard Lalla Brick's version. And, you know, I'd love to hear your version of Phil.
Well, he was standing against the wall when we were finishing up doing the doing Rhythm of the Rain. And he walked over and he looked at us all and he says, oh, he says, what are you guys doing, cutting a demo for Ricky Nelson?
Oh, wow.
And, of course... You know, when I look back on that in retrospect, I think to myself, you know, that was kind of I don't really know what to make of that comment, but I thought, well, maybe I should be flattered that he said he thinks I sound like Ricky Nelson. And but it was interesting. And when we were there at Gold Star, Cher, you know, Sonny and Cher.
Cher, I mean, first of all, Cher was part of that whole mechanism for years. She was a backup vocalist for the Crystals and so many other groups. You know, at that time, she lived it. I mean, she was part of the team.
Well, she used to sit at the front desk at Gold Star Studios and answer the phone.
Yeah, Sherilyn.
Yeah. Well, she would, you know, the phone would ring, she'd pick it up, and she'd say, Gold Star Studios, it's
wow.
a Cher.
Wow.
And, of course, most people would say, yeah, right, and I'm Julius Caesar.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Because she'd already had, you know, some success already when this was going on.
Wow.
But she just loved to, you know, put the, you know, people on when they'd call, you know, and she was, she's always been, you know, pretty witty that way anyway. I don't know her real well. I met her maybe once or twice,
right.
Those are two of the little, you know, things that I thought maybe your listeners might like to hear about. So anyway, go ahead.
One of the most fabulous shows that Paulette and I have seen in Vegas over the last 10 years
mm-hmm.
was Cher's show. We sat like second row center. She was so over-the-top good, and she looked so over-the-top good. She didn't hit a bad note all night, and I know she does not use pitch correction as some other people do.
Mm-hmm.
She was just absolutely fabulous, one of the best shows that we've seen in ages.
Yeah, she's, I wouldn't. She's
still
I'm
got
not
it.
Surprised.
You know, still got it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. So the Cascades were in a movie as well.
Yeah, we did a movie, I think it was in 64. It was starred Tommy Kirk.
I remember him. He was a Disney guy, right?
Yeah, he was a Disney guy,
right.
But this wasn't a Disney production.
Right.
It was produced by, directed by a guy named, he called himself Lee Rollem Sholem.
Wow.
His last name was Sholem, and he had this nickname, Rollem, you know, like...
Rollem Sholem.
Yeah, and... this was a movie called Catalina Caper,
right?
And it was so bad that it wound up in that mystery science fiction theater where the little robot sits in the front row with the guy, and they put down, you know, movies that they watch. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, I'm going to look for it on Netflix, though. It's got to be somewhere.
Oh, it is. Well, it's on. I'm not sure. That's interesting. I have Netflix, and I've never tried to search for it.
Yeah,
I know that there's clips from it on YouTube.
Uh huh.
including the one that the Cascades are in.
Now, you guys did rhythm in that?
No, actually, we wound up doing a song called There's a New World.
Oh, okay.
And it was written by Ray Davies of the Kinks.
Okay.
And it was a horrible song, and the recording was horrible, and I don't even remember who was responsible for that, but it was just, you know, from that standpoint, it was a horrible experience, and it was done at on a yacht tied up at the pier in Malibu,
uh-huh.
And then I think they went over and did some of the shooting over on Catalina Island, because
uh-huh.
I remember going across on the boat. Doris Day at that particular moment was filming the movie Glass Bottom Boat.
Okay, I remember it.
Doris was shut up in a room. I guess they had a private room for her where she was there with all her dogs.
Right.
She was always a big animal person.
Right.
And the movie, it's the other musical stars in it was Carol Connor.
Uh-huh.
And Little Richard.
Oh, Richard Penniman.
Yeah, yep. Richard Penniman. And His segment in the movie, I thought, was the best sounding one of them all, and I've never tried to find what Carol Connor did in there. Of course, you know, she was one of the original teddy bears.
Right.
And, it was a fun experience, but it certainly didn't do anything for the Cascades' career. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, you know, let me tell you, the teddy bears tunes, you know, they weren't big productions either. Phil Spector didn't get into big productions until later on.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So he had no reason to give you that Ricky Nelson comment. As a matter of fact, I would have taken it as a supreme compliment just for the fact that he walked over and said something anyway. Because you know,
I was just amused by it. You know, it was
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you should. I don't know if he's getting email these days. So I would say send them an email.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to even talk to him. He's a strange man. You know, he's been strange all his life. He was strange back then. He's still strange.
No, you know, I agree.
Yeah.
And you know, we could get into all of that stuff. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I live in Florida, so you know, we did Casey Anthony for like 4 years straight. And now it's like, it's starting to fade now, the whole Casey Anthony story.
Yeah.
She better do something quick if she wants to make a buck, because nobody's going to care. In another 20 minutes, nobody's going to care anymore.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, it's like next.
Yeah. I've been sitting at the computer this morning watching my Ira go back into the toilet again.
Oh, well, you know, I'll tell you something. I have very strong feelings about that because I still have money in the market, and my feeling is I'm not going to get out now because everything is a pendulum swing. I want to wait until, you know, it comes back, which I know in my heart that it will.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
However, you know, I'm thinking back for the last 20, 25 years, shame on all of them for allowing us to be so beholden to China and OPEC.
Uh-huh.
And I never make political statements, but, you know, now, you know, just while I'm on the subject, you know, shame on all of them for allowing this to happen to us.
I agree. Without getting into anything political.
Yeah, it doesn't matter which side you're on.
Yeah.
I mean, shame on them, you know. They're supposed to be protecting us from all of this.
Exactly. In fact, I posted something on my Facebook page. I am on Facebook page. I am on Facebook, by the way, for all the listeners out there, and I'm readily accessible if you want to write to me.
And you can find John, as a matter of fact, we are really sitting in the midst on Facebook, which happened, you know, as an evolutionary process, a tremendous nucleus of very talented people that are all, you know, our friends, our mutual friends on Facebook. Some of your favorite people are in that little music nucleus, and it's just amazing how that works out, because when I first said, I'm going on Facebook and to promote the radio show, and everybody says, Facebook is for kids, and it's amazing as to what I found on there and the people that I talk to every day that are our peers, and you know, here they are again the second time around, and they're all just, you know, a keystroke away.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, well, I'm enjoying it a lot, and it's proved to be a great networking tool for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and I actually, a friend of mine is the one who signed me up for Facebook because I wasn't even sure how to do it.
Right, right.
And but once I got on there, I'm hooked, and I spend way too much time on Facebook. And
I hear you, but you know, people get to not only enjoy your talent again, but they get to reach out and touch you where they did not have a chance to do that unless they went to, you know, the Cascades show.
I love hearing from the fans, and
right.
I've heard from people. I mean, I got an email from Syria not too long ago.
Absolutely.
And the young man that wrote to me even said to me, he said, you know, in this country we can get in trouble for listening to rock, to Western music.
Wow, still.
Yeah, and of course that's not, you know, if you look at the newspapers and see what's going on in Syria right now, you know that.
Absolutely.
You know, what kind of a regime they have over there.
Right.
But, yeah, I just find it, you know, a lot of fun, and some of the stories that I hear about, you know, the first time people heard Rhythm of the Rain. And
well, they do have rain in Syria.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, how could that be a crime?
Yeah. I mean, by the way, did Ned tell you how he actually found me or got in touch with me?
No.
An interesting story.
Yeah, we're talking about Ned DiMaggio, by the way. We'll give him a little plug.
Ned DiMaggio, who's putting together a tour right now called Jukebox All-Stars.
Right.
And I think he wants me to be a part of that. And he's got some very, very interesting acts, including Dodi Stevens, who you just interviewed recently. And I think he's got, he's talked to Mel Carter, and I think he's got Ron Dante and Chris Montez, a lot of big people. And
well, I sent him Lenny, you know, and we're talking about Shirley Alston Reeves as possibly becoming part of that. So, I mean, and Ned is a real solid guy. When I was singing with the Mystics group, I mean, we did a bunch of shows, you know, for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great experience.
Our phone conversations have been just incredible, and he's very, he and I are much aligned and have a lot of things in common, in a lot of different areas that
right.
I won't even mention, but we're, you know, what happened was Ned was on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
I had just posted one of my songs from my YouTube page, a song called Happiness.
Right.
And he wrote to me totally unaware of my background. And he said, I really like your song. He says, it'd be great if you could get somebody who's well known to do it.
Uh-huh.
And, I wrote back and I just, you know, I didn't say anything.
And you said, I used to be well known.
Well, you know, at that point, he had no idea that I was the lead singer with the Cascades,
right.
and that I, you know, was the composer of Rhythm of the Rain and
right.
all that. And he,
right.
but he just fell in love with this song called Happiness.
Right.
Have you walked a canyon trail with your lady, or with a puppy up and at your heels? Have you seen the desert sky at night, felt a high Sierra chill? Have you made love, my friend, on a bed of old pine needles? Wish you could know that kind of thrill. Well, I know about all those things, so listen to me good and I'll tell you about happiness. Can't you see it's wrong to drive yourself on? Gotta get back to the land and find yourself a piece of happiness. A little bit of happiness. Have you walked beneath an ancient tree? Makes you feel so small and weak. have you ever seen a snowflake fall in silence to melt away upon your woman's cheek? Have you seen the beach at 6 a.m. in its cloak of fogginess? And if you think that what I'm saying just sounds crazy, it's all the things in life you've missed. 'Cause I've done about all those things, and I want to share it all and tell you, my friend, about happiness. Someday you're going to stop and ask yourself why the money that you made bought everything but didn't buy happiness. It didn't buy you happiness. And even now your mind won't listen.
Even now your mind won't listen.
Yes, you can't slow down to see.
Can't slow down to see.
Take a look outside. Can't you see what's out
can't
there?
Can't you see what's out there?
Something that we know would set you free.
Something that we know could set you free.
Well, I know about all those things. So listen to me good and I'll tell you about happiness. Can't you see it's wrong to drive yourself on? Gotta get back to the land and find yourself a piece of happiness. 'Cause I've done about all those things and I wanna share it all and tell you, my friend, about happiness. Someday you're gonna stop and ask yourself why the money that you made bought everything but didn't buy happiness. Well, I know about all those things, so listen to me good and I'll tell you about happiness. Can't you see it's wrong to drive yourself on? Gotta get back to the land and find yourself a piece of happiness. 'Cause I've done about all those things and I wanna share it all and tell you, my friend, about happiness. Someday you're gonna stop and ask yourself why the money that you made bought everything but didn't buy happiness. Someday you're gonna stop and ask yourself why the money that you made bought everything but didn't buy happiness. You're gonna stop and ask yourself why the money that you made bought everything but didn't buy happiness. Someday you're gonna stop and ask yourself why the money that you made bought everything but didn't buy happiness. Didn't buy happiness.
And I wrote back and he mentioned something about that he was Dodie Stevens' manager, and I
right.
Why don't you you know, it might be a good song for Dodie to do. But anyway, that's how Ned and I met. And then when he found out, you know, that I was already, you know, performing and was, you know, the composer and a performer and all that.
Right.
That's how we met. And then he began to share with me his vision and his concept for Jukebox All-Stars.
Right. Which I am sure will be a success. And Ned, he's not new to this, so he knows how to do it the right way.
He's been around decades, I guess.
Absolutely. So I think it'll be a good thing. Now, you've been to Japan also.
Went to Japan. I was in Japan as part of one of the tours where I went to the Philippines. I went to Japan as well.
Right, and Malaysia?
Malaysia, yeah, Kuala Lumpur.
Right.
And it's it's been an interesting thing going over there because of the culture shock. You know, I mean, the Philippines, for all intents and purposes, are like a third world country.
Absolutely,
a lot of poverty there, and of course, the Philippine government, in spite of the fact that it's a democracy, there's an awful lot of graft in the government.
Well, I know that whenever I call Verizon, it goes right to the Philippines, so...
Oh, yeah. You know. I even talked to a girl over there. I was calling about something or other, and I asked her, I said, where are you at? And
right.
She says, I'm in the Philippines. Uh-huh. And so I told her who I was, knowing full well that she would know.
Right, she said, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Oh, she almost fell out of her chair, I think, you know.
She didn't say my grandmother listened to that record, you know, a thousand times.
Oh, yeah, I get that a lot from some of the young people. But it's amazing when I'm over there how many young people are in the audience.
Oh, absolutely.
The Philippine people pass the music down, and especially the Cascades are almost held in the respect of a national treasure over there. I mean,
wow.
Back in the old days, and when Rhythm of the Rain first came out, every household just about had a copy of the album, and they would have parties on Saturday night, and the whole family would get together, and they'd sing all the songs on the album.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard this, I was just totally, you know, it floored me. I was just amazed.
Who knew?
Yeah, I certainly didn't. The first time we went over there, first couple of times we went over there, we sold out the Araneta Coliseum, which
was
15,000 people.
Unbelievable.
We sold it out twice in 1 year.
How are the sound systems over there? Are they sophisticated?
They're terrible.
Oh, okay. That's, you know.
I mean, you know, they do okay with what they got to work with, but, you know, it's not the sound. I'm sure if you do any, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff on YouTube that was shot probably by fans who were in the audience with phones, and they just did, you know, phone videos and posted them on YouTube.
Gotcha.
And they're just awful, you know, and I'm embarrassed when I see them, but I think to myself, I don't have any control over that, you know.
It's what it is.
At least underneath all that, I could hear that we sounded halfway decent. But I knew that, you know, the lack of sound quality had to do with the either the venue we were at or the equipment that was used to record us, and you know, so you know, you can't, like I said, you can't control things like that.
Now, on your website, it seems as if you started writing your biography. Does that mean that you're going to finish it and write a book?
You know, I thought about that, but I thought to myself, would anybody really be interested in reading my life story?
You'd be amazed, you know, at what, you know, if you make the storyline good. I mean, my friend Don Riggio, who wrote 7-inch Vinyl, I'm sure you know that book.
I've heard about it.
And if you don't, I have to get him to send you a copy, because it's just a fabulous, fabulous fictional book that is built upon factual material about some fictitious characters that wended their way through the late 50s, early 60s. And now he's writing a sequel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he first sent me the book, I said, hey, I didn't read it for a while. I just, you know, threw it on the stack and I read other things. And I said, well, you know, I'll get to it when I get to it. Once I picked it up, I couldn't put it down. It's just fabulous. And the fact that he's writing a sequel, you just can't wait to hear what's going to happen next to these characters, because they went through all of the things and got bounced around the music business, just like all the people we know, you know, experienced those experiences. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
You know, Dee Dee from Dick and Dee Dee, the original Dee Dee,
right.
Mary Sperling.
Right.
She did a book recently about her experiences, you know, traveling with Dick St. John and
right.
And her, you know, experiences with Dick and Dee Dee and the
right.
whole thing. And it's a rather interesting read. And of course, I think I would probably like it better than because I'm in the business. I kind of enjoyed it, but yeah, she has a book out, and mm-hmm. I've been written up, and there's a book out on the market called Off the Record. Several years ago, I was contacted by Graham Nash from Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Love those guys.
Yeah, aren't they great?
Yep.
And anyway, Graham called and asked if I would like to be part of a project that he was undertaking, and what he was doing. He was doing a book about famous composers and their songs.
Uh-huh.
And so he asked if I would like to be a part of it. And
what a thrill to be asked, of course.
And of course, this included... there was a chapter, half a dozen pages or thereabouts of each person that was in the book. And then also in the beginning was a live interview on CD with each person.
Uh-huh.
And they actually, you know, he sent someone out to the house, and we, you know, got out his tape recorder, and we did the live interview in my guest house. And it was... it was very interesting, and it was a lot of fun, and this led to me doing some original artwork that he had a thing called Manuscripts Originals, and what it was, he was selling, he would, you know, go to the person who wrote a specific song.
Right.
And have them do the lyrics to their song on a piece of paper, and but on top of some sort of artwork, whatever they decided to do. And I'm not an artist, but I did a big heart with a bolt of lightning down the middle, so that the heart was cracked open.
Wow!
And then I did my lyrics on top of that, and they sold it in places like Neiman Marcus. And
wow, fabulous!
Yeah, and it was didn't really ignite that much. I mean, it didn't set the world on fire, and I don't think anybody involved made a ton of money on it. But it was a fun project, and I was glad to be a part of it.
Wow, that's fabulous. I'm glad they didn't ask me. I would have done stick people.
Well, some of the stuff is almost like that. You know, they actually had something done by the guy who wrote You Are My Sunshine, which he's recently passed away
right.
in his 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Eddie Snyder, who was the guy who wrote Strangers in the Night.
Right.
And they had, I'm trying to think, there was Peter, Paul, and Mary, and that was the one that wrote Puff the Magic Dragon.
Right, right, right.
In the book.
Right.
And I believe Carole King was in the book.
Why not? You know.
So, and the guy who wrote Spanish Harlem, there's a rose in Spanish Harlem.
Right.
Did a pretty good job.
Right.
And so that, you know, it was a fun project to be involved in.
Now, are you in the Songwriters Hall of Fame?
No, I'm not, and I've been in touch with them. I've talked to Tony from the Letterman. He's very involved.
Okay, because April Anderson, who is an executive there, her mother was my vocal coach, Lucy Bell Anderson, for years. She was a woman that was on the hit parade and whatever, and a real diva. She just recently passed away. But, yeah, I've been in touch with April. I hadn't spoken to her in years, and I reached out to her, and she's still there doing her thing in a place that, you know, She writes and you know, she sings, but you know she's surrounded by gifted people, and she's exactly where she loves to be. So you know.
Well, somebody would ask me, I would love to be in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. You know,
I'm going to have to hook you
up. The Vocal Group Hall of Fame.
I'm gonna hook you up with her as well.
Okay, great.
Because you know she's a terrific gal. This is a person that you should be talking to.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know. So let me ask you this. After all these years, Rhythm of the Rain being as important a tune as it was and still is there anything that John Gamow has to say to the fans of the Cascades?
Well, that's an interesting thought. I think it's, you know, I hear from the fans all the time via email and on Facebook and everything, and I'm I think I want to tell all the fans that I'm grateful for their support and for helping to keep the music alive and keep up the good work, because you know I'm humbled by it all, and it's been a marvelous, wonderful ride for me. I have no complaints, and I just, I think it's, you know, it's probably, without a doubt, the most important thing that I've ever done in my life is to be a part of the Cascades and to have had that experience. And I'd especially like to thank our Filipino fans, who have really, you know, in this country, people know the Cascades and they know Rhythm of the Rain. They don't know much else beyond that because, you know, the other things just kind of, you know, it's just the way it is in this country. You know, it's just a different, set of circumstances.
Right.
But I'm grateful and I would like to say thank you to all of them.
Well, you know, the song has touched people throughout the world. Interesting, thinking back. I'm sure you guys did American Bandstand at some point.
You know, we never did. And
interesting.
I blame that on our management. You know, DeMartino got us our record contract, and I'll always be grateful for that to have happened. But when it came to actually setting things up with things for us to do, we were not placed with an agency that you know we should have been. back in those days, we should have been playing London and Tokyo and Paris.
Right.
And, we should have been going all over the world.
Part of a national or a worldwide tour.
Right. And instead, we were going to Spearfish, South Dakota and Clear Lake, Iowa.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and I'm not, that's not to put these places down because we had a good time there and the fans were wonderful.
But he wasn't thinking that big.
No, he wasn't.
But the song was that big. So,
yeah, it warranted that, but because it was showing up on charts all over the world,
right?
And it just, you know, but and the management just really didn't, you know, do what they should have done.
Well, it's like they always tell you: you got to go follow the record, you know, wherever it is, you got to go follow it,
exactly.
Because a record would break in certain little cities around the country, and the record company would send you out to do sock hops in a town that you couldn't even pronounce because that's where the record was breaking. And that's how you built that snowball rolling down the hill.
Right.
An amazing thing. Well, I know that the new project is going to work out in a wonderful way as Ned continues to put it together. If Ned does not bring it to Florida, then I guarantee Paulette and I will fly out to see you wherever you are. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you recall, I had a group called Harmony Street years ago. It was three girls, myself on lead, and a bass singer. And we did everything but have a hit. You know, we did all the big oldie shows, sang at all the big ballparks, the national anthem, went to the White House for the Clintons a bunch of times, and just did some great things. But you and I were writing back and forth to each other in those days. It had to be about 20-some-odd years ago.
I was writing to you last night and sending you songs. I went to put your email address in that you gave me in the most recent one.
Right.
And came up. I have about four different email addresses for you.
Right. And that goes back. I'm assuming that goes back all the way to 20-some-odd years ago when you and I were first sending a few emails back and forth, and I had remembered that you lived on the West Coast, and that it wasn't until all this time later that I started seeing you on Facebook, and I said, oh, you know, that's John from the Cascades, because we did have quite a few conversations at that point.
If I could plug a few things, I will be in Jackson, Tennessee, on October 22nd with John Ford Coley several other artists. And I'll be going back to the Philippines in November.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And I'll be working for Bowser at Pechanga Casino in Temecula, California on the 15th of October.
Bowser always puts on a great show and always carries the best musicians in the business.
Well, John and I have talked on a number of occasions. He's been, you know, John is a marvelous, marvelous person. All the work that he's done in the Truth in Music,
you bet,
you know, things. And, you know, he has instigated, he's traveled all over the country trying to get laws passed to make it illegal for copycat groups.
Successfully, because...
Absolutely. He's done an amazing job. He and I think there's another fellow involved who was an attorney, I believe. And,
right.
But, you know, this kind of thing is, you know, he doesn't have to do this. You
no,
know
you're
what I mean?
Right.
But he is, it means something to him, it's important to him, and I salute him for it.
And he's also a fabulous concert pianist that most people don't really...
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, he plays on stage a lot of times. You'll see if he's in the mood, sometime during the show, he'll go over to the piano and he'll just dazzle everybody.
That's amazing.
He's an amazing pianist.
Yeah, wow. Things that you learn.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's a groovy guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's been my pleasure, John, talking to you, and I wish you all the best. And as I say, we're going to make plans to come and see you. I want you to continue the rhythm of the rain to every nook and cranny on this planet, because the tune just deserves to live on.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure for me, and I'm looking forward to meeting you live.
Absolutely.
We haven't had that opportunity yet.
We'll absolutely do that.
Looking forward to coming to Florida, because I know that there's some wonderful venues there, and it's not a venue. It's not an area that I've actually performed in before.
Well, we have baby boomers here that just can't get enough of the music. This is the music that they grew up on, and the music that they crave. I mean, you know, we have a 57 Seaberg jukebox in the house filled with vinyl. You know, we live it. So, You really do.
I recently did a T.J. Babinski special.
Oh, great.
And that's been aired already. It was aired about 6 months ago, and it's been on.
Right.
And but it was a lot of fun, and went on, did Rhythm of the Rain, and I've been getting a lot of good positive feedback from it. And
that PBS exposure never hurts. What he came up with PBS was genius.
Oh, absolutely.
And he generated with the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and was just a stroke of genius.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to pay homage to him.
Oh, I do. I'm just grateful. And thank you so much.
All right, John. I appreciate it, and I'll be talking to you real soon.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure, John.
Okay. Well, very nice talking to you, Mike.
All right. You too, John. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This is Lenny Welch, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Everybody laughs to see Judy being mean to me. Everybody here in town knows that I'm just Judy's clown. Oh, every place we ever go, everybody seems to know. Well, they know we're just a Punch and Judy show. Judy makes a fool of me. Why can't she just let me be? Even though I know the score, I keep coming back for more. Oh, every place we ever go, everybody seems to know. Well, they know we're just a Punch and Judy show.
Punch and Judy show.
I wish I knew why she acts this way. We're like puppets in a play. Judy plays at being cruel, while I must act a happy fool. Happy fool. Though I smile, it hurts inside. Even puppets have some pride. I would leave her if I could, if my heart were made of wood. So every day we'll give our show, and it always hurts me so. Yes, we'll always be.
be a Punch and Judy. Always be a Punch and Judy. Always be a Punch and Judy show.
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 Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Cinderella, Cinderella. Cinderella, she must be home. How I wish the night would never end. Oh, if only this magic night had a few more hours it could lend. Cinderella, you must go now. Your mom and dad made the rule. Cinderella,
too. Well, I have lost a lot of nickels in a way.
I got a lucky penny and a mustard seed, but warm and tender love is all I need. And I want a love that lingers and is stronger through and through. So I'm gonna cross my fingers that I find a girl to love me. And I'm gonna love her too.
And I'm gonna love her too.
Yes, I'm gonna love her too.
And I'm gonna love her too.
Oh, I'm gonna love her too.
And 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 I'm gonna love her too.
Oh, I'm gonna love her too.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found.
Ooh. On Harmony Street,
ooh,
there was a place when we were feeling down and we were low. We looked into each other's eyes and found the road that led us to
Harmony Street.
A big surprise to find we really cared. We looked into each other's heart and found the road was free and clear to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all. There were times when we both had our doubts, but through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes and found the road that led us to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all. Times when we both had our doubts, but through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. Somehow we found our love drifting away. There was nothing I could do, nothing to say. We looked into each other's eyes and found a lonely thought.
harmony sweet. Open up your heart, recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found.